Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, by VeloFix, by RunCatalina.com, the Catalina Island Marathon, 40th anniversary coming up on Saturday, March 11th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $80 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. And definitely check out our shows on Babbittville.com, on iTunes, and subscribe to our newsletter. Our next guest, the Ultraman World Champion for 2016, Kate Bevilacqua. Kate, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks, Bob. I'm doing even better now I've had a week's recovery.
I was going to say, that is a long, long weekend. That's unbelievable what you guys do.
It was a long weekend, yeah. I mean, yeah. I knew what I was in for, but you can never, you still can't prepare for everything. You just never know.
So growing up in Perth, netball.
Yes.
That was your main sport?
Netball was my, yes. Do you know what netball is?
I have no idea. Is it sort of like, almost like a basketball type of thing that you throw the ball into a net or something?
It's very similar. It's massive in the Commonwealth countries, so it's played at Commonwealth Games and things like that. But, it's similar to basketball, except we're not allowed to run with the ball, and there is no backboard behind the ring. So when you shoot for a goal, it has to go straight in, like otherwise you will miss.
Gotcha.
And you have zones as well that you're allowed in, so everyone doesn't go everywhere.
Playing that, was that something where the goal was to get to the Commonwealth Games or potentially, is that an Olympic sport? I think it is.
It's not an Olympic sport.
Okay.
Not all countries play it. Only Commonwealth Games was the highest level in world champs. But, I mean, I had aspirations, yes, of playing for, state and country, but I was constantly told I was too short and that was going to be an issue. I know. Can you believe it?
No. What's so funny? It's like I remember talking to the Marinda Carfrey when we first started interviewing her, and she was like a basketball player. I'm like, now, you couldn't look in a mirror and sort of sense that this is not going to end well. Right. At some point,
something's missing.
Something's missing. You better go find it. And with her, I remember her telling me, I trained harder than anybody else on the team. And it just didn't seem like I was ever going to play in any games outside the region. And then she did her first triathlon and qualified to go to Worlds in Canada or something. She goes, oh, OK, maybe this makes sense.
This might be a better idea. No. I was exactly the same. I felt like I had the talent, but there was just one thing I couldn't do anything about, and that's what, they were looking for. And I didn't have that. But I did continue to play it and loved it and started doing triathlon on the side to keep me fit because netball was a winter sport.
Right.
So triathlon in summer seemed like a good fit.
So when did you feel like, okay, this triathlon thing is going pretty well, I could be really good at this?
Oh, not for a while. I mean, I was involved in the sport as an age grouper probably a good 4 or 5 years, and mainly over Olympic distance. I was not interested in going long. I didn't have any dreams of doing Ironman or anything like that. But the coach I had at the time was brutally honest and said to me he thought that I had much better endurance and not very good speed, and he thought I would be better at long course. And it took him a while, like 4 years, to convince me to do Ironman.
Were you thinking Olympics? Were you thinking, okay, I like the shorter distance? Just so non-drafting Olympic.
I was never thinking, I was doing the sport for fun.
Okay,
there was
age
never
group.
I was never thinking professional. I was never thinking, making a living from the sport. I just enjoyed it, and I enjoyed the community and the camaraderie and pushing myself to those limits. I had never thought about, the potential of where I am now. That happened. I went to Hawaii as an age grouper and finished third.
Right.
Tyler Stewart won my age group that year. So another, lady who was a fantastic professional triathlete. And when I came back to Australia, my coach said, that performance qualifies you for a professional license. And I said to him, I don't know what that means. I don't understand. Can you explain it to me?
Yeah.
So literally the next couple of years I continued working full time and dabbled in a few races. And then after that I was like, wow, maybe I can do this.
So you finished third in your division twice in Kona.
No, actually the first year I went to Kona as an age grouper, I struggled and I finished in 12 and a half hours.
Okay.
And I was retired from Ironman after that.
You decided no more.
This was a bad idea. And then probably 3 months later, I was like, oh, I think I can do better. So I went to Coeur d'Alene and qualified at Coeur d'Alene and then went back to Hawaii. And that's when I, finished third.
That's when you got your third. Okay.
That's when I got my third.
Then you decided to go pro.
Yes. Yep.
Nice. And so as a pro, three-time Ironman champion. Ironman Western Australia in 2010, Korea 2011, Louisville 2013, and then you know 2014 Ironman 70.3 Busselton, and I know there's not huge dollars in those races, but you're winning races and taking home prize money. So when you decide, that hey, I think I'm gonna triple the distance and go do something like this Ultraman thing, where oh by the way, there's no money whatsoever. And it's going to cost me money to get myself and my crew there. You know, is that sort of the same decision-making process that always, hey, I think I'll be good at netball and I'm 5 foot nothing here.
I do get that question a lot, and especially, you know, the timing of the event, considering I'm getting married in 6 months and I just blew my wedding budget on going to Ultraman World Champs.
Right.
No, it was something that I had been talking to Guy about. I mean, the past 6 years, every year in November, Ultraman World Champs would be on, and I would follow it for 3 days, and I would say to him, I want to do it one day. Like, I think that would be amazing. You know, it's something I'd love to do. And at the end of 2014, when we were watching, I think he was like, you know, enough's enough. Like, why don't you just go and do one?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You keep talking about it. We tell our athletes that we coach for GK Endurance, you know, follow your dreams, follow your goals, you know, you've got nothing to lose and, you know, maybe now's the time and you should go and do it. So in 2015, I went to Canada.
The Canada Ultra 520K.
Ultra 520, yes. And which was, you know, an amazing experience and I loved it. And then after that, the natural progression was, yep, okay, now I want to do a Hawaii next.
Yeah.
So that was literally how it happened. But you're absolutely right. There's so much more for us to consider because once you put into play the training, the race itself, the recovery, I'm looking at a good third of my year being taken out by doing that. So, you know, 4 months of the year where I'm not earning any money from races.
Right. Yep.
And recovery. A considerable amount of time.
Yeah, the recovery from it, the build up to it. You know, I mean, you can use, it's funny, I can use an Ironman race as a training race to get ready for Ultraman. I can use a race that actually has money in it as a training race to get ready for the race that has nothing in it and is going to cost me my wedding budget. I get that. But I mean, when you went to that Canada Ultra 520K, You know, not only did you set a course record for the women, you set a course record for the race, and you're the overall champion of 24-16-17. Did you surprise yourself at how well you did there?
I did, actually. I did surprise myself, but if people had seen me the end of day two or towards the end of day two, I was in a bad place. Like, I pretty much crashed and burned it. 210 Ks. Like, I still had, you know, 35 miles to go. And I was sitting in the back of our minivan with a Red Bull, cursing myself, saying, "Why on earth did I decide to do this?"
Yeah.
So I was that night I was, you know, laying in bed with guys saying, "I can't run 84 Ks tomorrow. Like, I can't do this. This is a bad idea." So I really struggled day two, and I think, you know, that made me day three start off quite conservatively and just relax and take it slowly. And I ended up having, you know, a fantastic day three. So the whole event did surprise me. And I think it was why I was, you know, really excited about going and doing another one. And it made me realize maybe I was okay at doing the ultraman distance.
Okay. So what did you learn about yourself when you go through those type of struggles that not only helped you, but also is something you pass on to the athletes you coach? Because obviously, you were, like you said, you were in a dark place. You didn't know, how am I going to get through this last 35 miles? How am I? And then in the back of your head, you're thinking, okay, tomorrow I'm going to be running over 50 miles. How do you, you know, what did you learn about yourself through all that?
I mean, you learn that you can do it. You're definitely capable of doing it. And I just, you know, I had to change my mindset and I had to change what I was hoping to do or, you know, how I was hoping to do it. So, you know, the ride was just taking a mile at a time. My crew started stopping sooner and I knew I'd be seeing them sooner and I'd be able to get nutrition sooner and just adapting in the moment to allow me to be able to keep going and not thinking too far ahead. It's just one of those things, if your mind is willing, your body is able, but you will still go through those dark patches and the mind will still be thinking negatively and just having to try and turn it around. It's very hard to do.
Yeah, no question.
It makes a big difference.
The other thing that I like about that racing, one, you know, for our listeners, there was 30 participants in the Ultraman this year, and it starts with a 10K swim and a 90-mile bike on day one with 7,600 feet of climbing up to 4,000 feet in the volcano over on the other side of the island. And then the next day is a 171-mile bike ride, and the following day is a 52.4-mile run, as if the first 2 days weren't enough. So what's fascinating to me is just, you know, it is a team event, and you come from netball, which is a team sport. Do you like this aspect of it, that it is a team thing, that really you depend on your crew to help get you through?
Oh, I love it. I love that aspect, that it's a team involved in it and I'm sharing the experience with them and the emotions and, you know, the days leading up and then the days of the events and the days post. And it's something that I was talking to someone last weekend at Ironman Western Australia and explained that when you do Ironman, you go out there for 10, 12, 14, 16 hours and you experience so many highs and lows and then you come back and you explain them to your supporters or your friends and your family about what happened out there. But with Ultraman, they're out there with you. Like, they are there when it happens. They know how you felt or they can see it. And I, you know, had a flat on day two and they could see the stress in my face, but my crew was calm and they changed everything so quickly. And you know, we were off and it wasn't even an issue. And there were so many things over 3 days that we shared that, you know, good and bad. And, it means a lot that I'm able to run down the finishing line with them and cross that line. For me, I wanted them all with me at that point in time because it was something we'd achieved together.
Now,
like, it's really Kate, Janine, Ruth, and Guy, you know, our world champions, not just Kate.
So were your folks out there too?
Yes, my mum and dad were out there too, and that I was so glad they were there. They weren't able to come to Canada, but you know, when I said I was going to Hawaii, like, oh, wow, Hawaii, yeah, sure. Yeah, I think we can make that one.
They sound like my wife. My wife's like, yeah, oh, you're going to Canada? Yeah, no. Oh, you're going to go to? Oh, yeah, I'm in on that. Sure, no problem.
Yeah. So, that was, and my, you know, my parents have known how a lot I've wanted to do this and how much it meant to me. And I could see it in their faces when I finished that, you know, they were so proud and just so excited to see me achieve what I wanted to achieve.
What I think is funny is a lot of times, like you just mentioned, when you finish an Ironman race, you're all anxious to share all the highs and lows of the day. And meanwhile, family and friends are bored to tears because they've been out there all day doing absolutely nothing. So you're like, at mile 30, my gears, we don't care, all right? We keep telling your stories and we're going to go put our headphones on. But the fact that they're part of it, then they get to share story as well.
That's right, yeah. So it does make a difference. And, like I said, it's something special that we will share and talk about for a long time. And I mean, there's some stories that are not fit for public to hear. But
we want to hear some of those. Come on.
Quite happy to talk about.
Come on. So to talk about the difference between you do an event in Canada and I don't think I've seen as diverse a in terms of weather, in terms of the topography, the Big Island, and I don't know how much time you've spent there besides doing Ironman, That place is amazing. Were there points during the course? You're racing, but you've got points on that first day of the bike ride where the wind was 40 to 50, it seemed like. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then you're down on this red road during the second day, which is probably the most beautiful cycling I've ever seen. And then you're climbing the Kahalas, you're like another over 8,500 feet of climbing on day two. What were your thoughts on the island itself when you got a chance to see it at all?
I've been to Kona many times, for mainly for Ironman,
yeah.
You know, in October, and also the 70.3 I'd done a couple of times. But and I knew what the weather on the island was capable of. I had driven around many years ago with my mum as well, so I'd been to Hilo and realised how opposite the climates were. Actually, Guy was telling me when I was running during my 84 Ks that Kona has 11 of the 13 climates on the one island.
The island
of Hawaii. So you have to just be prepared for absolutely everything. And we drove the course. I'd ridden to Volcano in October, so I'd experienced that. But when I did that ride, it was nowhere as windy as it was on race day. Like, that wind on race day was
crazy.
I've never experienced anything like it, and I've done Ironman Hawaii many times.
Yeah.
But that was, yeah.
That was nuts.
Very, very windy. And day two, we drove the course the weekend before Ultraman, and we didn't have the rain in Volcano, but we had the rain going up Waimea. We couldn't even see anything. It was so misty. I couldn't see up Waimea, up the Kahalas, and it was extremely windy. So I had been prepared for the worst on day two and a pretty good day on day one, and in the end it went the other way around. We had really strong winds day one and a lot of rain, but I felt we were lucky with the winds on day two. And then typical hot weather.
Yeah.
Once
but it's
you get
Hawaii.
Closer and closer to Kona.
Well, it's funny. It's a people every year in Kona, you hear after it was the hottest and windiest year ever.
That's
and I'm
right.
like, guys, come on. I've been there since 1980. It's the same. There's a little extra here or there, but it's hot and windy. Okay, get over it.
That's right.
How hard
and,
is
I mean,
yeah.
people were asking.
Yeah.
People were looking at my photos going, you had arm warmers and leg warmers and a jacket on day two. Like, what is the deal with that?
Yeah, you're on Hawaii. What are you doing? And I'm like, now imagine if that was this weekend, this last weekend.
Oh, isn't it snowing?
Yes. There's like, I think, 12 feet of snow up at the observatory. We would have been under snow at the volcano. There's no question about it. It was.
That is amazing.
I know.
A
week later.
That.
Yeah. So the stage aspect part, the stage race aspect of this, where, you know, it's one thing you swim a 10K. I think you were second out of the water overall, and then you ride 90 miles. But then, you know, that's the beginning of the conversation because you got to recover in order to do the 171-mile ride the next day. How important was that for you, and how tough is that? Because usually when you do an Ironman race, okay, I'm done. But this is like you're doing an Ironman. It's a 12-hour cutoff type of thing, and you're doing, you know, 7-8 hours. And then, you know, it's not like you can go celebrate because you got to get ready for next day.
I know, and I think that's the additional challenge that, you know, some people don't think about. And when I spoke to people who had participated in Ultraman events before or in particular Hawaii, and even I remember talking to Hillary, it was that aspect of the back-to-back days that was so important, and you don't realize how much, you know, getting the calories right can affect your performance. And so that was something I got wrong day one to day two in Canada. Like, I wasn't, although I had someone counting my calories, I wasn't on top of making sure that I replaced what I'd used during the day, then tried to top that up to prepare me for the next day, because you would normally carb load for an event,
sure.
you know, going that long.
Right.
So I didn't do that day one, and I paid the price on day two. So we knew that was something I had to do every single day and night. And also during the swim. I mean, even during the swim, Guy was stopping me every 2Ks and I was having like a goo gel and, you know, goo electrolyte drink and water because it was just the beginning. It was the
right.
beginning of 3 days. You
yeah.
know, if I swim 10Ks and I don't say anything, that's 2.5 hours of no nutrition and I've got to try and ride the first hour and a half uphill of the bike.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
There was lots of little things. Every time when I got up during the night, I was eating. I would have a goo protein, like recovery shake, there with me. I would have a banana, and I was having a snack if I woke up in the middle of the night. So I was always topping up my calories so I wouldn't. Yeah. I'd be ready to go again the next day.
So the other aspect of this race is that, you know, you're finishing with that 52.4-mile run. And, you know, I've done races before where I'm in, you know, the last 10K of a marathon or whatever, and somebody jumps in and, hey, let me run with you. And it drives you absolutely crazy because you can tell they're fresh as a daisy and you are on your final thread. For you, having, you know, guy run with you who's, you know, pretty fresh because he, you know, hasn't really done the swim. Is there a point where it's like they're trying to make you happy? They're trying to be upbeat. But at the same time, you sort of want to be in your own little zone and tell them to shut the heck up.
Oh, it's so true. I mean, I apologize to my crew before we start. I mean, Ruth and Guy had done it in Canada with me. They were my crew there. So they knew what they were in for.
Yeah.
Deneen hadn't. So I had to just say to them, look, you know, before the Thursday before the event, I apologize now for anything I say and do. I don't mean it, but, you know, we'll get through this together and we'll still be friends.
That's good that you set that up.
The run is definitely the point. And especially I was deep in the Hurt Locker probably the last 20Ks. And
yes.
My crew would come out and run next to me and they were running a little bit faster. And I'm like, slow down. No, you two, come back.
Like, yes, yeah.
I can't go that fast. You need to just, but then they would slow down and go slightly behind me. And I'm like, No, I want you, like, just next to me.
Exactly.
They were getting, like, trying to work it out so hard that, I mean, there was one time Ruth rang with me, but I think she was a little bit afraid to say anything to me.
Yes.
She wasn't sure what was going to come back at us.
So these are the type of events that you could do, if you want to compete well, you do one a year. Right, you say, okay, I'm going to do
it. I don't know how these people do multiple.
Oh, my God, it's crazy.
I'm in awe of them.
Yeah.
Yes, I could not do it. One a year is enough for me. Yeah.
So will the goal next year be to come back and defend?
I'm just taking a bit of time to get
yeah.
to recover.
Yeah, there's no rush. You got plenty of time.
That's right. But, look, I do want to go back to Hawaii, whether it will be next year or, you know, the year after.
Uh-huh.
I will wait and see and decide. But, I definitely agree with you. One a year with the preparation and the racing and the recovery is enough. But there's also, with where I'm at in my career, there's also, you know, some great events around at the same time of the year that I would love to race. I love to race at home, and Ironman Western Australia was on last weekend.
Yes.
And there is no way I could back that up a weekend after an Ultraman. So... there's some other things that I need to consider. But,
well, in Western Australia, yeah. You'd won that in the past.
I have, yeah.
Yeah, so and that's sort of in the hometown, right, or somewhere
in
the area.
It is hometown.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
so there will be a return. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, exactly. So this next year, in terms of – and then also, do you find that by mixing in, you know, doing some Ironmans and doing some 70.3s, and even doing Ultraman, that they sort of help each other? Because when you're in an Ironman race, you go, gosh, I did a 320-mile race. This is not that big a deal. And when you're doing Ultraman, you're going, listen, I've done things that are a lot faster than this, so this shouldn't be that bad. Do you find yourself using some of the things you learned from the other distances to help you out on race day?
Definitely. Yeah, that's right. All the time. So... and I'm sure, you know, it'll be something I just continue to do and remember, you know, I did this and I've done that. And so hopefully mentally it can help me, you know, with other races and the next year and the season I have coming up. But, now it's about trying to find some of that speed again.
I was going to say, do you find when you do this, because it's funny over the years when you talk to folks who transition from, 5K, 10K to marathon, and they come in with this raw speed and they do really well right away. And same with people coming from ITU, they step into Ironman 70.3 or Ironman and usually do well right away because they got that raw speed. And you've got that from three-time Ironman, being a three-time Ironman champion, you have that raw speed that you can use for Ultraman. But you also, sometimes when you become an Ultraman person, you can lose that speed because you're focusing on, I need to put that long miles in because I've got to figure out the eating and drinking and all that stuff. Is that something that you're trying to balance?
It was, and I think that I was lucky in a way, you know, because the Ultraman Hawaii falls at the end of the season, you know, I'm not having to prepare or back up now with anything too soon.
Right.
So I was able to do, you know, I raced a 70.3 the end of August and then started training for Ultraman in September. And there was no races I really had, any other races I had during that time. So for me, it was about increasing the miles and really just aerobic endurance work. So I know for sure I've got a great base now, but, yeah, I'm going to have to, you know, go back now to working on the speed and trying to go a little faster, especially with all of these these ICU athletes that are racing half Ironmans and Ironmans now. They are very fast.
Well, especially coming off an Olympic year. Then you have a tendency to see them all step up. You see them all step up to longer distance. That is so cool.
Yeah.
With the three Ironman championships, and now you win Ultraman. Is there one that stands out? Is the Ultraman? It's a world championship title. Is that bigger than the others?
To be completely honest, yes. A world championship title is bigger than winning an Ironman. It's But, I mean, I don't want it to take away from winning an Ironman is extremely difficult these days.
Yep.
And people dream of it for years and years and years, and some people do and some people don't. And every one of those victories means so much to me. But, how many Ironman events are there every year and how many people
Nine,
have won
there's
them?
45. There's 45 foals and I think close to 170.3s now. There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
And there's one Ultraman.
That's right.
one Ultraman World Championship. Yeah. That's cool.
That's right. So it is pretty special. And, I'm pretty excited to be able to say it. That's what I did.
Has there been much media around the fact that you just won a world title? Is it different, the type of media you're getting, than from winning an Ironman title?
Oh, it is. I think I feel like there's been more. I think it's fantastic. I feel like the sport, the Ultraman distance and the sport itself has so much potential for growth, and I feel like a lot of people are interested in doing it and just like me are unsure about whether they will or they won't. And I'm hoping in particular I can encourage more women to go and do it and get involved, because they're truly capable of it. That's not an issue, and I think once they do it, you know, they'll realize and they'll have so much fun doing it at the same time, because of it offers something different to the Ironman and to the half Ironman event. But I had a radio interview in Perth two nights after the event, which was fantastic. And things like this, chatting to you and the publicity's been great, and like I said, hopefully you can encourage more people to go out and do them. We have an event in Australia now, Ultraman Australia in Noosa.
Yes.
Beautiful location.
What could be better than Noosa?
Great race.
Yeah.
That's right. So,
What I think is fascinating is when you get folks, and if you look back at the history of Ironman, what really turned that event around is when you get top athletes, like back in 1980 when this guy John Howard, the cyclist of the 70s and three-time Pan American game, a three-time Olympian, came over, it gave the event credibility. Having someone like yourself, who's a three-time Ironman champion, recent Ironman champion, not someone from 20 years ago, coming to Ultraman, it gives credibility. It's like, well, wait a second. I thought I moved to Ultraman when I was done being competitive at Ironman. Right? And people move up. They usually move. You think they move into 70.3 and Ironman when they're done being competitive at ITU. And what you're saying is, listen, this is end of the season. There's no reason I can't be competitive at Ironman and come over there with my speed and show that, hey, maybe there's not prize money at Ultraman, but I can certainly get a lot of notoriety. It can help my brand. It can help my company. and at the same time give some credibility to the event and the other competitors, because you are coming in as a three-time Ironman champion.
Absolutely. I mean, that's 100%. You've explained it so well. And, yeah, I'm hoping, it does have that effect. And I'll be trying to do as much as I can and encourage people that, come and chat to me or talk to me about it, that, oh, please, absolutely, go and do it. You will love it. I'll help you out. Let me know what you need.
Well, and that's the other aspect of that event is, I saw, Inaki, who ended up winning the race. I think his crew ran out of water, and guys in second and third place were like, oh, here, let us help you out. That aspect of it, the camaraderie, we're all in it together. It's us against the course, not really us against each other. Do you feel that's different than an Ironman or Ironman 70.3?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I started ran the first 10Ks with Trout.
Yes.
Fellow Aussie who ended up,
who's hilarious.
A fantastic.
Yeah.
And he had, a great 3 days, and he's getting better and better with every Ultraman that he does. And we were chatting away, and I'm learning more about him and his life and his, and it was great. Like, it helped to, the first 10Ks wasn't an issue. It was fine.
That's the best.
And just, things like that wouldn't happen in any other event, for sure. It wouldn't be like that. So
very
cool. I did say, at the awards, it's an event that no photos, no footage, no video, nothing, unfortunately, really gives it true justice, because it's about the feelings you have when you're there and the people you're with, and you just have to experience it yourself to really appreciate what it's all about.
I love it. Hey, Kate, thanks so much for taking so much time. Congratulations. Again, Kate splits the swim 231.58, 90-mile bike ride 554.34, 817.57 for 171 miles on day two, a 759.35 for a double marathon. I love that. Total 24 hours. You raced for a full day, 24:44:04. That is crazy. You guys are crazy people. You know that, don't you?
Oh, I definitely know that. Yes, there's something missing.
So when are you and Guy getting married?
We are getting married in May.
Love it. And hopefully not at an event. It's something you go off and do.
No, it's in Perth, and we definitely not an event. But we had to plan it around the biggest event. Our Busselton 70.3 is the biggest event we have in Western Australia. Actually, it's the biggest 70.3 in Australia. So we had to make sure all our guests were going to be in the right type of mood to celebrate. So we made sure it was after that race.
Love that. And that's an event you won in 2014.
Yes, that's right.
And that is a hometown event.
Yes, it is.
God, that is great. Kate, thanks again for taking so much time.
No worries. Anytime.
Kate Bevilacqua has been our guest, the Ultraman World Champion for 2016. We are brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series, by VeloFix, RunCatalina.com, Catalina Island Marathon, 40th anniversary coming up on Saturday, March 11th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $80 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on iTunes or in Babbittville. Subscribe to our Babbittville newsletter. And as always, endurance lives here.